right. Hello, world. Mic? Or at least that part of the world that can hear me.
I was going to bring it in, but then Mike didn't turn my mic up.
Oh, you're turned up. Stop it.
Which is, welcome back, Michael.
Thank you.
Been gone much too long. It's good to have
Mike back with us. Band
I know,
thing.
I'm back from cheerleading camp. It was a long summer, but I miss you girls.
Well, we need cheerleaders of our own. So
did you perfect your herky?
I perfected everything.
Good, then you can keep us on track.
I invented a few moves.
Ooh.
Well, while you were gone, we've been doing pretty much what we always do on Wednesdays, the anniversary thing. And we hit 1979, and we did a show on singles from 79, which wasn't awful, but it wasn't so great. And of course, that made me think, what about albums? And I started looking at the albums, and I was...
And it was phenomenal.
Totally freaked out. There was like so many great albums that came out in the summer of 79 that I realized I couldn't do it in one show.
Great summer.
People probably knew the decade was ending, and they were like, we got to make it a good one fast.
It was just the times. I mean, we did two shows already, focusing mostly on, I would say, mainstream artists and American artists. And then we were going to do our third show, and real life intervened. First, we had Willie DeVille had passed away, so we had to dedicate a show to him. And last week was our Woodstock anniversary show, so we had that happen in the interim. But I really can't close out without doing our third show of music from the summer of 79, because it's...
Well, the summer's almost over, so we got to get it in there.
Get it in while we can. And I was more or less leading up to this one with the first two that we did. So this show is made up completely of English artists. What was happening in England, and it was almost like a second English invasion, not quite with the immediate impact of what happened in 1964, but nevertheless, it was still pretty intense, and a lot of this music is still sounding great today. I'm personally completely convinced of that. So let's get into it as quickly as we can, because I want to cover a lot.
Yeah.
First band from 30 years ago, this summer, you know, this season, is a band that I figured had broken up by 1979. They're not a new band at all. So I don't know if you'd be calling them part of an invasion. They put out their first album around 72, and their fifth album came out in 1975, and then that was it. They were totally silent for 4 years, except for solo projects. Most of the members went out and did some solo work. Well, all of a sudden, 1979, they came back again and they appeared and they released this record. Critics kind of like were about it. It's one of my favorite albums by this band ever. It's still one of my favorite albums ever. I'm talking about Roxy Music and their reuniting album, which came out, as I said, in the summer of 79. It was called Manifesto.
Oh, I knew it.
This track is from that album. Here's Still Falls the Rain.
Share. I'm the man, I still love this album. I know you do too, Heidi.
Oh, I had it. That was the probably one of the only albums that you didn't have that I brought into the collection when we moved in together, right?
Oh, you mean that I did already have? Yeah, of course, because I had three copies of it.
Oh, I thought, no, you know what I had was an extended play thing.
Yeah, maybe something completely different, because I had the English version of the album. Then I bought, there was a British version, which had slightly different mixes of the songs. And then they put out a picture disc. And I bought the picture disc as well.
Oh, you had to have that, too.
Which is really kind of corny, because I'm not really a big collector of picture discs, but when I played it, it had an alternate version of some of the songs.
Oh.
It was one of these albums that kept getting changed around.
That was worth it, then.
It totally was worth it. And I still love this record. I mean, I love Roxy Music. I liked all their stuff, but...
So funny, because, like, so many people are now just download a song for, you know, a buck or less, whatever, and never get into, like, what the album looked like. At all. I mean, you know, it's just something on a
MP3 player. Well, that's changing too, you know.
How do you mean?
Is it?
What, like people buying vinyl and stuff too?
Not much. Yeah, almost nobody's buying vinyl, really. I mean, they say there's a resurgence.
I think there's a really big resurgence, actually. I think it's bigger than you guys think it is.
It went from, like, say, 100% at its peak down to about almost 1% or 0%. And now that the resurgence means that it's back up to 4 or 5%.
I would say maybe, like, 20%.
I don't know. Too many people are still getting rid of their turntables, I'm seeing. Right here at the radio station, no more vinyl.
I don't know. We need like a hipster census or something.
Yeah, it's the hipsters or audiophiles who still get into it.
Yeah.
But the thing about with Roxy and this album, I mean, to be completely honest, I wasn't really in 79. I think I've talked about my own change, how I was like mostly a Southern rocker until like by 78, finally punk hit and I began to get it.
Right.
So in 79, I was anxiously looking for something new and different. And because of where I came from, I wasn't a Roxy Music fan for those first five albums. This album came out, totally blew my mind. I became thoroughly infatuated with Roxy Music, and I went back and I bought the catalog, and they became one of my favorite bands, and they remain, to this day, one of my favorite bands. And I mean their catalog from their very first album, which is also brilliant. But I highly recommend Manifesto, because it's a really easy listening album in terms of, like, the songs are really palatable. There's cool changes, things going on, and it appeals to people who like it. If you like music to be a bit more technical, or if you like it to have a sort of an edge, it fits both of those bills brilliantly.
Mm-hmm.
It really does. In fact, let's play one more song from it really quickly from the same album called Manifesto. Here's Roxy Music again. This song is called Trash.
Teenage fever, oh, you've got it bad. Caught the flavor, want it all. Only 17, bet you know the trash. We'll be right back.
All right, that's two from Manifesto. Right. I mean, I wish I could even play more, of course, but I'm really trying to squeeze in as much as I can. So even two songs is a bit of a luxury when I'm trying to cover so much from 79. And you'll see what I mean as we go through this show. Obviously, this was after punk had established itself, and now the labels are trying to deal with what they can do with this new sound and how they're trying to incorporate it. It worked a lot better in England than it did here, which is why this show is interesting. You'll notice every one of these artists are based out of England. And the one dimension that came from punk, of course, was the whole idea of the angry young man coming back into rock and roll. Right. It was something that had more or less vanished. And there was a trilogy. There were three of them. And they all released, I would say, career-topping records in the summer of 79. Some of them at various points in their career, but they were all sort of like close to, no, they were actually all in different phases in their career, come to think of it. We'll start with the debut album. Joe Jackson really started off at the top, tapered off a little bit, then more or less plateaued for a while until he did begin to fade from the scene. But he never really quite was able to top his first album.
Look Sharp.
The album where he established himself as really like the epical version of the angry young man. And this song pretty much sums it up brilliantly. Let's play the title track from that album, Joe Jackson with Look Sharp. The first angry young man, Joe Jackson, with his debut album, Look Sharp. Now, at the other end of the spectrum was somebody who was actually, by this point, was sort of a veteran of the music business. He had already been around since the early 70s, making albums on the pub, the English pub rock scene.
Elvis Costello?
No. Graham Parker.
Graham Parker.
He released at least two albums that I would consider to be absolute, spot-on, perfect textbook examples of the best that pub rock had to offer. If you get either of Graham Parker's first two albums, Howl and Wind was one, and Heat Treatment was the other. They're brilliant, brilliant, brilliant pub rock albums.
And he lives in New York now, right?
Yeah, I believe he does. Somewhere
upstate.
Like, a little bit upstate from here, yeah.
I say upstate from here.
From where everything's upstate from here, right?
Right.
Unless you like living in the water underneath Jones Beach. So Graham Parker by now had about at least four albums under his belt, and the punk scene came, and he pretty much just decided to like let his more attitudinal side rise up for his own for his next album. And a lot of people say it was the best album that he ever put out. It was called Squeezing Out Sparks. And this is one of those, again, a textbook perfect album in terms of like what it was doing. It was like definitely had elements of like classic rock and roll to it, because the band was still The Rumor and they were just a great pub rock band. Maybe the best pub rock band that England had to offer. But Graham Parker brought a harder edge to his material, which really kicked everything up a notch, made it a real guitar album, much more than his previous stuff was. So from that album, let's play this track called Discovering Japan. Graham Parker and The Rumor from the album Squeezing Out Sparks. That song, of course, called Discovering Japan. As Heidi had mentioned, he is living in New York.
Yeah, he played not too long ago at the Bolton Theater. What town is that in?
Yeah, down...
you go catch Fire Island Ferry.
Exactly, right there. I was the name of that town.
His last record was actually really good.
He's put out a lot of great records since he's been here. They're, you know, more acoustic-oriented. Simpler, and he still has got a little bit of bile for the music industry.
It still has that like old Joe Jackson feel.
Yeah, he's a great writer. He really is a good writer. He's got a lot to say. He's smart enough to wait until he has something to say to write a song, and I'm impressed.
Yeah.
That impresses me about him.
Yep.
You know, he's not one of those people who feels the need to just kick out material, even though there's really not necessarily the inspiration. And this does seem more or less catch him at the peak of his career, though. I think here in '79. Which, as I said, was the case with all three of them. You mentioned the third already, Heidi. Elvis Costello was the third angry young man. And in the summer of 79, he released his third album. At this point, he was touring America with the Attractions for the first time. And they're going through all sorts of, you know, crazy nonsense. It was a very wild scene for them, writing the material on the bus. And the shows were getting bigger and bigger, and they were becoming very ambivalent about America as it was. But nevertheless, that's what inspired most of the songs on the album. But the album ended with a song that was actually a cover of the guy who was helping to produce Elvis Costello's album, which was Nick Lowe. Now, Nick Lowe had been in a pub rock band himself at the same exact time as Graham Parker in The Rumor. The name of his band was Brinsley Schwarz. Now, it turns out that Brinsley Schwarz, when they broke up, is the people that became Graham Parker in The Rumor.
Oh.
So when Nick Lowe went one way, Brinsley Schwarz and the rest of the band became The Rumor and backed up Graham Parker.
Oh.
Nick Lowe started his own career, ended up teaming up with Elvis Costello at around this time, put out the album Armed Forces. Because they had become friends, Elvis decided to cover one of the songs that Nick Lowe wrote for the band Brinsley Schwarz. So this is a cover of a Brinsley Schwarz tune from the album Armed Forces by Elvis Costello.
Ooh.
It's called What's So Funny About Peace, Love, and Understanding. to let you know you are listening to American Hit Radio on WHPC 90.3 FM coming out of Nassau Community College in Garden City, New York. I'm your host, Tom Ryan, here every Wednesday and Friday from 5 until 6, almost never alone, usually with my lovely wife and co-host, Heidi Morales, helping me out. And of course, today, luckily, we're also with Mike Tejan behind the board.
Yo, what's happening?
He's been with us for years and years and years, but he's been away for a while, so it's great to have you back, Michael.
It's good to be back.
You finally didn't sleep through the show.
I know.
I think you're here for a good one, too, because we got it's 79. There's a lot of cool stuff that I get to play today that I'm glad that you're here to share with us.
Sweet.
Just got done playing our way through the three angry young men that came out of Great Britain. That's Joe Jackson, Graham Parker, and Elvis Costello. One track from each of their albums from 1979. Probably career-defining albums for each of them, in one sense or another. Of course, Elvis Costello is still making great records, but the Elvis Costello who made that album doesn't exist anymore. That's just that's done.
That's what happens when you fall in love.
That's
I think
done. I mean, after Get Happy,
you lose your angst.
Elvis, once he made that country album, he moved on to about 20 or 30 different other things.
Don't say I didn't warn you,
Mike. I need some of that.
Well, the track that I just played, though, by Elvis Costello, as I had mentioned, was written by Nick Lowe. What's so funny about Peace, Love, and Understanding? And it so happens that Nick Lowe put out an album in the summer of 79 as well, of his own. Pretty darn good one, too, called Labor of Lust. So this track is from that album. Here's Nick Lowe singing Cracking Up.
Cracking up, I'm getting ready to go. Had enough, I can't take any more. No pills that I can take. This is too real, and there ain't no escape. It scared the daylights, it make a nightmare. I'm tense and I'm nervous. Everybody all around me shaking hands and saying howdy. I don't think it's funny no more. Cracking up like a worn out shoe. Ain't wet, but the world leaking through. I'd run, but I find no pace. I laugh, but it's wrecking me, wrecking me. It make a shiver, it make a shake. And make a monster just like an earthquake. Everybody having fun. I don't know how they can carry on. Cause I don't think it's funny no more. Upon me without warning. If I were gone, then I would shoot. I'd tear the head out by the root. I'd make a knife out of a notion. All at sea in an ocean of emotion. I don't think it's funny no more. I don't think it's funny no more. Cracking up. I don't think it's funny no more. Cracking up. I don't think it's funny no more. Cracking up. I don't think it's funny no more. Cracking up. I don't think it's funny no more. Cracking up.
Nick Lowe. Part of that whole British music scene that was beginning to, you know, knock the world on its heels. In a way, it's interesting because none of these albums individually had an overwhelming impact. None of them became number one albums.
No, not at all.
None of them even came close to that. What it really was more than anything else was it was the alternative, kind of like what the alternative music scene was before Nirvana turned it into. something which was, you know, number one
classification, right? They didn't know where to place this stuff, where to play it, or anything.
A lot of this stuff wasn't even charting.
You call the classic rock station thinking, okay, well, it's rock and roll, and they're like, we're not going to play that. It's not Bad Company.
Right. That's more or less what this was about. This was offering the alternative to things just like that. You know, if you were a Van Halen fan, you'd be kind of like upset if you heard Roxy Music on the radio or any of these artists, perhaps. But it was giving a big percentage of the population an alternative, a choice. And it was and like I said, the whole angry thing.
Yeah, if you can find it.
So it's like some things never change, you know? Like, what's so different about that today?
Right. And I mean, and even now, like, you got like David Lee Roth would be saying things like, you know, relax. What are you so angry about? But other people are thinking, that's the point. There's emotion involved in this. It's not just posing. It's not a matter of, you know, how cool you look or
hair
whether or not you got,
spandex.
You know, great spandex and a haircut. Right. It's about having an attitude.
Well, it's part of it, Tom, okay?
In fact,
I'm
just
getting you some spandex. Watch out.
I already have
to
some.
Really make my point is this next artist, this guy really had some very physical disability. Has physical disabilities. Ian Dury was not really a well guy.
He had polio.
Yeah, he suffered from polio, and you know it affected the way he walked. It affected pretty much an awful.
tall he grew, everything. Right. I mean, he was also a midget.
And of course, his sensibility.
Little person.
Sorry.
But
inappropriate word, I guess.
It's okay.
These days.
You're forgiven.
In the summer of 79, he put out his second album. The first was called New Boots and Panties.
I love that album. That's,
that was his definitely the signpost album for him. This was the follow-up
Wake
album.
Wake Up and Make Love.
That he released. Yeah, it was on the first album. Second album had no hits, but it was still vintage Ian Dury in terms of the attitude. So this is a short song from the album called Do It Yourself. It's a song called Uneasy Sunny Day, Hotsy Totsy.
Bank from the banks, withhold the rent. Shitters are a wank and the landlord's bent. It's time that the baby's kept quiet, no it ain't. Open up the nicks, close down the schools. The law is a prick, not fit to write the rules. It's time that the baby's kept quiet, no they're cool. Time that the baby's kept quiet, no it isn't, don't be silly. Uneasy, sunny day, hutsy-tutsy. Uneasy, hutsy-tutsy, sunny gym. Question your besotment with your manky job. Squat on your allotment for 30 bob. It's time that the babies kept quiet, shut your gob. Melt the guns, dismantle the bombs. Love your neighbour wherever they're from. It's time that the babies kept quiet, up your bum. Time that the babies kept quiet, no it isn't, don't be silly.
Uneasy, sunny day, hutsy-tutsy. Uneasy, hutsy-tutsy, sunny gym.
Langale junkie, young and full of spunky. Don't care what you tell us, old and fat and jealous.
Uneasy, hutsy-tutsy, sunny day.
Pills to fun, damn the muse. Different choice, different things to choose. It's time that the babies kept quiet, drink your booze. Time that the babies kept quiet, now it isn't, don't be daft.
Uneasy, sunny day, hutsy-tutsy. Uneasy, hutsy-tutsy, sunny. Uneasy, sunny day, hutsy-tutsy. Uneasy, hutsy-tutsy, pokey pies.
It was kind of weird when Ian Dury put this album out, because after the album New Boots and Panties, he released two songs that definitely became radio hits. Reasons to Be Cheerful, Part 3. You know, why don't you get back into bed? And Hit Me With Your Rhythm Stick.
I thought that was on New Boots and Panties.
No, I'm not positive, but I don't think it was.
Hit me with your rhythm stick.
You know, I could be wrong now. Maybe you're right. Maybe that was. But either way, the hits were not on this album. It was just crazy songs like what we just heard, Uneasy Sunny Day, Hotsy Totsy, being fairly indicative of what that album was like in 1979. Yet another artist from that time then, from 1979. Now, I should cover groups. This is, I these guys eventually fit into the exact same mold as everybody else. I know that they eventually did work with Elvis Costello later on in their career. In fact, they released the song Black Coffee in Bed with Elvis Costello singing backup vocals on their album. And I know that they appeared as guests on a few Elvis Costello tracks as well from the album Trust, I believe. But in 1979, it was Squeeze's... was putting out their second album. They put out their first, called UK Squeeze, produced by John Cale, and it was just a flat-out weird album, to be honest, not really that likable.
And
it didn't
came, what, Pulling Muscles from a Shell?
No. Came this album, Cool for Cats.
Oh, okay.
And this is the album that came out in 79, and this is the album where they really established their personality. The whole thing of the two different vocalists singing octaves, one way below the other, and very, very English stories that would like, take you through these long, convoluted... Every song is like a mini movie.
Yeah, that's what I liked about that song, Up the Junction.
Exactly. In fact, now that you mentioned it, maybe that should be the song that we play. Here's Squeeze from Cool for Cats with Up the Junction.
Some forgiveness, but begging's not my business. And she won't write a letter, though I always tell her. And so it's my assumption I'm really up the junction.
Their second album, but definitely the first one to fully capture their personalities and what the band was about, the mood of it. That's Glenn Tilbrook singing on that track. But there was a whole other side to the band, and I guess I should play one more song from this album if I can, so you can sort of get the idea of the Chris Difford influence. He's the guy who always sang, you know, underneath Glenn by at least a full octave usually. And he actually provided the title track for the album. So let's play that song then as well. Here's from the album Cool for Cats by Squeeze. Here's Chris Difford singing the title track, Cool for Cats.
Cool for Cats.
The Indians send signals from the rocks above the pass. The cowboys take position in the bushes and the grass. The score is with the corporal, she is tied against a tree. She doesn't mind the language, it's the beating she don't need. She lets loose all the horses when the corporal is asleep. And he wakes to find the fire's dead and arrows in his axe. And Davy Crockett rides around and says it's cool for cats, it's cool for cats. The Sweeney's doing 90 cause they've got nowhere to go. They get a gang of villains in a shed up at Heathrow. They're counting out the fivers when the handcuffs lock again. In and out of Wandsworth with the numbers on their names. It's funny how the missus always looks a bleeding sane. And meanwhile at the station there's a couple of likely lads who swear like as your father and they're very cool for cats, they're cool for cats. Change the mood a little, I've been posing down the pub. I'm seeing my reflection, I'm looking slightly rough. I fancy this, I fancy that, I wanna be so fresh. I'll give a little muscle and I'll spend a little cash. But all I get is bitter and a nasty little rash. And by the time I'm sober, I've forgotten what I've had. And everybody tells me that it's cool to be a cat, cool for cats. Questions that she hangs onto the wall. I kiss her for the first time and then I take her home. I'm invited in for coffee and I give the dog a bone. She likes to go to discos but she's never on her own. I said I'll see you later and I'll give her some old chat. But it's not like they on the TV when it's cool for cats, it's cool for cats.
There's two from the album Cool for Cats, including the title song just there, Cool for Cats, preceded by Up the Junction. We mentioned Glenn Tilbrook and Chris Difford as the songwriters and the vocalists of the band, but there was another songwriter and vocalist in the band as well back then. On the first three or maybe four albums, Jules Holland was their keyboard player. And you might know Jules since then because he's gone on to do a bunch of different TV things, hosting various musical shows and things
most
like that.
Most of it in England, though.
Yeah. Although always good shows. Very interesting. Great interviewer, too. He's really good at talking with artists. And always liked Jules Holland. He had a great Ray Charles thing that he had about his sensibility and a good piano player.
He's a polite snob.
Yeah, I wouldn't even, say that.
Just
a really polite and very, I don't know, I'd say that he's very personable. Venerable toward people. Very personable, yeah. Always, yeah. I always thought he was. Hey, let me remind you that, of course, you're listening to American Hit Radio on WHPC 90.3 FM. And if you're enjoying the show, maybe you want to hear it again, or maybe there's parts of it that you want to check out, or you want to hear some other shows that you could have missed. We post them all on the internet, so you can go to our website. You can go to, well, the first one I'll mention is our archive, because we put everything there right away. If you go to our archive, you're going to see it within hours. And that is at Shut Up and Listen, SHADDUPANDLISTEN. .com. It's the SHADDUP part you got to remember.
Yeah, shady app.
And listen. Go there and the show will be posted. You can also go to our main website, AmericanHitRadio.com or AmericanHitNetwork.com. It's the main page. And our Wednesday show is on the left and our Friday shows are on the right. So you'll see this show posted on the left very soon. And just check it out if you can. All right. We are playing music from the summer of 79. And this is our third show dedicated to that. And as you can tell, everything we're playing here is artists from England, English artists. And you can see that although none of these albums were huge, they are very influential.
Yes.
And they remain fresh. I think all these albums still sound very fresh and fun.
Some of these artists are going to be covered on our Friday show.
Very possible. Exactly. And how music changed. If we get up to this era, I think you're right. Our next artist will definitely be covered on our Friday series of How Music Changed, if I live long enough to cover it at the rate we're going. But David Bowie had been recording a series of albums with Brian Eno producing. There were three of them, actually. Low was one. Heroes was the next one. This is the third album of that trilogy. Probably the best, had, or at least the most accessible, because it had the most hits on it. Although the first song I want to play is not one of those hits. It's the leadoff track. I think that this is perhaps the best song ever written about, well, perhaps about a Holocaust. That's how I hear it. I hear it about what would happen if we were stupid enough as a race to do something that could actually end our reign here on Earth. And it's such a beautiful and touching way to start off an album. A very short opening song from the album Lodger by David Bowie. Here is a song called Fantastic Voyage.
In the event that this fantastic voyage should turn to erosion, lives are valuable too. We're learning to live with somebody's depression, and I don't want to live with somebody's depression.
We'll get by, I suppose.
It's a very modern world,
but nobody's perfect.
It's a moving world,
but that's no reason.
Shoot some of those missiles. Think of us as fatherless scum. It won't be forgotten, but we'll never say anything nice again. We'll wait.
And the wrong words make you listen. Lives are valuable too. We're learning to live with somebody's depression, and I don't want to live with somebody's depression.
We'll get by, I suppose.
But any sudden movement,
I've got to write it down.
They wipe out.
I've got to write it down,
but I'm still getting educated. But I've got to write it down, and it won't be forgotten, 'cause I'll never say anything nice again. How can I?
In 1979, you could not overestimate how influential David Bowie was. He was making the best videos of anybody, and I would even say maybe even better than Michael Jackson at this time, although Michael Jackson's videos were like setting all sorts of records. But Bowie was making really interesting videos around here. And one of the songs from this album that had a video to it that I remember specifically as being so incredibly cool and influential was a song called DJ. Really great. Basically, it involved Venetian blinds and David Bowie acting sort of like a drugged out DJ, being really cool on the street with all these people hanging out with him as he's throwing records all over the place. It was a unique scene as far as a video goes, and the song itself is absolutely great. Bowie, full of attitude and like piss and vinegar, really, and it's just funny to hear it on this album. Again, the album is Lodger. Let's play that track. It's called DJ. Still such a great album. And to clarify the timeline for some listeners who had called in, Station to Station was an album that came out before the Eno trilogy. It was recorded actually in L.A. And after that album was done, he had moved to Berlin and started working with Brian Eno. And that's where he did Low Heroes and this album, Lodger. That's why they were the Berlin trilogy, so to speak. All right. Well, this is awesome. I enjoyed this because I wish I could. There was always time periods that had such great music. Because this is like me coming of age, and this is some of my favorite albums. I got one left that I want to play. We'll end on this track. It's a band that made some of the best pop music out of England. Maybe they were punks, but they were still translating perfectly fine in the pop new wave part of things. I'm talking about the Buzzcocks. They released an album called A Different Kind of Tension. Came out in the summer of 79, and I can't get over the fact that the song is 7 minutes long because it doesn't get. It sounds like it's a minute and a half long pop song. That's how good it is.
What is it, Fast Cars?
It's I Believe.
Oh, good.
So here, of course, from that album, A Different Kind of Tension, the Buzzcocks. We will end with this track, and we hope you can join us again on Friday at 5 p.m. for How Music Changed. Take care, everybody. Here's the Buzzcocks with I Believe.
In these times of contention, it's not my intention to make things plain. I'm looking through mirrors to cast a reflection that can't be mine. I'm losing control now, I just have to slow down a thought or two. I can't feel the future and I'm not even certain that there is a past. I believe in the workers' evolution and I believe in the final solution. Ship of things to come, and I believe I'm not the only one. Yes, I believe in. I believe in. When I poison my system, I tear those and twist them into shapes. I'm reaching my nadir, and I haven't an idea what to do. I'm painting by numbers, but can't find the colors that fill you in. Not even knowing if I'm coming or going, if to end or begin. I believe in the immaculate conception, and I believe in the resurrection, and I believe in. I believe in. I believe in the elixir of youth, and I believe in the absolute truth. Yes, I believe in. I believe in. To offer resistance to the flow of time. Everything is, and that is why it is, will be the line. I believe in perpetual motion, and I believe in perfect devotion. I believe in. I believe in. I believe in the things I never had, and I believe in my mom and my dad. Ages for the forward to end. Triangular cover, concealing another aspect of you. My relative motion is just an illusion, it's often too fast. The essence of being, these feelings I'm feeling, I just wonder.